Isometropia. But in office, found a little vertical prism, and so was able to loose lens that over her current glasses and seem to have fusion and be comfortable in the office. And then that was kind of my experience with her. Again, you know, similar to what Dr. Marsh was relaying, is, you know, we were having some issues with back and forth and being able to communicate and recall previous conversations. And so I did ask her in the last exam if there was, you know, a family member or someone that we could bring to talk to try to help with the communication process, which she declined. She said she didn't have anyone that would be able to do that. And then that being said, she had a second pair of glasses made and similar experience as the first. And then I guess ultimately she was unhappy. I didn't speak to her after the second exam. It was all through the optical department, and she was unhappy and was fully refunded for the glasses. And I believe her initial visit to her re-refractions, obviously, we didn't charge for it.
Okay, thank you. Does that conclude your remarks?
It does.
All right, thank you. So I'm going to open this up to the board for discussion. Any comments among the board members?
This is Darcy Jones. I just had a quick question for the doctors. Did you guys trial frame her just to see if and have her walk around a little or anything like that? Sometimes I do that.
So in the second exam, you know, she had the glasses and we found almost no change. So we did use, I used her glasses, loose prism over the top, and have her, you know, look around, look down the hall, you know, nothing real extensive, but just using her glasses that we had remade almost as a trial frame. Although she, you know, we did go from single vision to progressive because the glasses she said that she liked better were a progressive, and she said that's what she would like to do. So the first remake was made into a progressive lens, but, you know, we used that, I used that as a trial frame in the second visit.
Dr. Mastoras, any comments?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. The first time I saw her, all she had with her was the 10-year-old pair. And they had an imbalance in them as well. And she kind of, well, so I assessed her in those, but I did not do a trial frame. But she seemed to be fairly adapted to the 10-year-old pair and kind of made the comment she just wanted new ones. So I assumed she was doing okay with those. She didn't have any major complaints about her old ones.
Understood. Thank you.
I wasn't sure if you had
You're really quiet. Could you speak up a little bit?
I know. I can barely hear you guys too.
Okay.
You know, I'll put in some earbuds and see if you can hear me better. Okay.
Okay.
I wasn't sure, Dr. Marsh, that you actually had the glasses at the first exam. So I thought that would have made it much more difficult if you didn't know what she had been wearing habitually.
Right. There's in the pages on the, I think one of the technicians had no glasses in one of the boxes on the record, but there's a page that has the lensometer measurements from that day. So I did have them. And I was looking at the lensometer measurements, and I honestly, I did not realize they had put no glasses, or I'm thinking what they meant, she hadn't been wearing them recently. She just brought them with her, I think is what the technician was thinking. But there's a lensometer measurement from the day I saw her.
Yeah. Well, my comment is I think you guys did a good job. This is hard. It was a hard prescription. I think you got her in right away as you could, and it's just really hard. I commend you for trying the prism. It's hard, you know, so I just think you did go above and beyond for her.
Madam President, can I say something?
Absolutely.
This is Dr. Chrysagas. I was going to say that, you know, patients like this with prescriptions like this, when you got over 3 doctors of Anaso, and yeah, I tried a single vision prescription too. Now you go to a progressive, now you're gonna get the Anaso difference into the bifocal. That is a hard thing to do with a patient that you can't communicate with. When you have a patient that is difficult to communicate with, it's gonna make it even harder. I would like to make a motion to dismiss this complaint based on lack of violation of any optometric statutes.
This is Darcy Jones. I'll second that motion.
Any further discussion? I'll offer a few thoughts. I was just going to participate in the discussion just for a moment. My comments to Dr. Marsh, I completely agree. I would have gone with a single vision design out of the gate also before trying slab off PRISM. So that would have been my approach. But Dr. Pfau, I thought I understood when I was reading your response that when the patient came in for the initial follow-up, that you offered six base out PRISM based on fusion in Ferroptor is what your comment said.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. And so
loose lens was in the second visit, but yeah, then in Ferroptor because we didn't, you know, I didn't like her current, we did find a change in prescription. So yeah, I didn't put it in a trial frame, which would have been a possibility.
Yeah, so my comment is that, so one, if you have a patient with almost five diopters of anisometropia in a single vision pair of glasses, double vision can be a complaint associated with that large aniso. And so if she comes in with a double vision complaint, you want to keep that in mind. Your refraction looked great in that you lessened the anisometropia in that prescription. But my reaction to looking for a minimal amount of fusion in Ferroptor, you're restricting all of the peripheral vision. And so, and you've affected the binocular vision when you have refracted in Ferroptor and done it one eye at a time, you've already disrupted fusion. And so to measure a prism balance in Ferroptor, to me, is not effective. And maybe I'm wrong, maybe I have something to learn here, but just as your colleague, I'm offering you this, that you've affected binocular vision. You've essentially invited aphoria into the party, so to speak, and now you're gonna measure it in Ferroptor without peripheral vision, without any context for vision for fusion. So I would never personally measure a double vision complaint that way. I would have certainly trial framed it and then loose prism until minimal prism until fusion occurred. But to go from what looks like an old prescription with no prism in it to six base out is a large jump. And I would have questioned that from the beginning. And so I just offer that feedback, I guess, in this instance. I will say that when the patient came back, it didn't seem like she had a double vision complaint, but she was still having a blurred vision complaint. And so this is just, like I said, colleague to colleague, that looked wrong to me, like that could have been a problem right there. And so that's all the discussion I offer. Did you have any comments you wanted to respond to me with before we proceed?
No, I appreciate your comments.
Okay. So then we had a motion to dismiss the complaint as there is no violation of the Optometric Practice Act and a second. So I'm going to take a roll call vote. Dr. Hunter?
Aye.
Thank you, Dr. Chrysagas.
Aye.
Dr. Mastoras?
Aye.
Dr. Jones?
Aye.
And I also vote aye. That's a 5-4. The motion passes. Thank you, Dr. Marsh and Dr. Pfau, for joining us.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, guys, for your work. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
So I'd like to move on to agenda item D3, IR number 202110. And actually, I think we have Dr. Blom on the phone. So can I revisit that? I will come back to Dr. Wu's case. I'll try to address your case first, Dr. Blom. So agenda item number D7.
Madam President.
Number, yes.
Excuse me. I think you're looking at the draft agenda.
I may. I looked for an updated agenda, and I didn't see it. So is Dr. Blom item agenda number 6?
Yes.
Okay. So I'll just try to adjust my numbers. So item agenda D6, Dr. Paige Blom, IR number 202114. Is that correct? That didn't change?
Correct.
All right. And Dr. Mastoras, would you like to provide a summary of this complaint?
Yes. Okay. So this is IR number 202114, Dr. Paige Blom, America's Best. The patient is TS and GZ. The exam date was January 5th, 2021. And the patients complain of HIPAA violations and COVID concerns. The patient summary is the patient observed that patient charts were without security and weren't secure in the office. They described the chairs in the waiting room were all occupied. People were coughing. In the optical, they saw multiple people trying on frames, 3 to 5 people in the retail area, no sanitizer, no sanitation policies, no cleaning of instruments. There was no distancing of the patients within the testing areas or the doctor's office. The patient describes a male staff member being removed by police officers with patient files on him. They continue to complain about files being everywhere, open and unattended. They wanted to leave, but they had to pay first. They paid the fee for the exam, but they were concerned with the privacy of their charts and had requested to get them. I believe a manager or a supervisor was involved, and I do not think the patient ever received their charts. I'm not sure. Do I also do the doctor's reply or let her do that?
No, I think she can do that. Okay, and then is patient GZ on the phone?
Patient GZ, are you on the phone? Patient GZ? No response, Madam President.
Please.
Okay, thank you. So Dr. Blom, am I pronouncing your name correctly?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so if you'd like to take an opportunity to respond to the complaint against you, this is the time.
Okay, I guess I'm just contracted to do the exams there, so a lot of what they complained about, I don't really have any control over. That's just an office I fill in at, so I'm not really sure what their policies are on a day-to-day basis. I know company policies, I clean off the chair between every patient, I wipe down the equipment, we either sanitize our hands or we wash our hands. Chairs are spaced in the waiting room. Patients are supposed to put glasses to be sanitized in a bin. I'm in the back, so I don't see what's going on up front. And I really don't know what went on in regards to the person who got arrested. I talked to the manager. She said the patients have been given a refund. She told them that we have to keep a copy of their chart, but we would put it in a safe, and that's really all I know.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. So I'll open this up to the board for discussion. Dr. Hunter, do you have any comments?
No, I don't.
He does not have any comments, Madam Chair.
Okay. Any other board member?
I have a question, or a couple questions. This is Dr. Kasagas. So you're under contract, and obviously you don't have any control of what goes on out front. But as far as the records go, are the records are yours or the people that you work for, correct?
Yeah, the people I work for.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so, one of the things I had a concern with was that the supervisor from America's Best told the patient that if she liked it, if she wanted to, they could move her records to a more secure location. What does that mean?
I think she was just referring to moving it to a safe instead of we have the charts. The charts are in a filing cabinet behind the front desk. I think she was just trying to move it to a safe so that they thought that was not a secure location behind the front desk. I think that's what they were referring to.
So the more secure location wasn't necessarily a totally different location, a totally different office.
Right. I don't know about that. I wasn't part of that discussion, but she told me they offered to move it to a safe.
Okay, because obviously even though you're just doing the exam, there are definitely some personal items and different things that you don't want to get, especially this day of this age of HIPAA and HIPAA violations. The records being around and out for everyone to see is not necessarily the best way to go about things. And even though, again, you don't have anything to do with that, they are your records that you have to protect for the patient. So somehow that has to be brought into this effect too. I do have a question, but this one isn't for the doctor as much as it's for we can't do anything about, as a board, we can't do anything about America's Best, or I can't remember what the parent company is about their policies of anything, but is there, but as far as an eye exam is concerned, you must purchase the same day to get the price on the glasses and a free eye exam?
I don't think that's correct either. I'm not sure how that works, but at the office I usually work at, we let patients, they pay for the exam. When they come back, they get credited for the deal when they come back to buy their glasses. So I'm not sure how that works at that office.
Margaret, is there a problem with, because I know we've had before where, you know, if you come in and you buy glasses, you get your exam for free and you're not supposed to be able to do that. But again, we don't have any right or we don't have any power to do anything to America's Best anyway. Is that the Board of Dispensing Opticians that would have to do something about that?
Right. So, Madam President, members of the board, Dr. Chrysagas, we could refer the issue with the cleaning and sanitizing and the office policies to the Dispensing Opticians Board, as they do license both the establishment and the optician. So I think that would be appropriate. And to answer your question, you know, it's very challenging with our advertising law. You know, a lot of bait and switch type advertising goes on, it seems like. We did have something similar previously. But the key is that, you know, are they charging for the prescription? Was the prescription generated, regardless of whether or not the person got the eyeglasses there, I think is the question that you would need to ask. Because otherwise there might be an issue with that. So the board could open a complaint to investigate that portion or continue it to get information.
Okay.
Does that conclude your remarks, Dr. Chrysagas?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Okay. All right, any further comments or discussion? Would anyone like to make a motion?
I can. Why do I feel like I don't want to bogart this motion, but in this case, I would like to issue a letter of concern for record keeping, or maybe not record keeping, but I think the doctors may need to look at a way that they can secure their the patient record and personal history, and because that is something that needs to be done. And maybe if the doctors told, again, maybe it's National Vision, I think it's National Vision, that they need to protect the sanctity of the record, and that they shouldn't go out, they shouldn't be in pockets, they shouldn't be anywhere, that if the doctors tell them that they need that to be done, maybe there can be a better job done of protecting the personal history of the patients.
Is there a second?
I'll second. Dr. Master is second.
Okay. So we'll take a vote. Dr. Hunter, we have a motion here to issue a letter of concern regarding record keeping.
No discussion?
Oh, yes. Any further discussion?
It took a while for a second, so maybe there's some discussion coming up.
Well, this is Darcy Jones. I guess what I'm questioning, you know, we talked about, are we going to forward this on to the optician board or what? Are we saying, are we okay with that part,
Darcy,
of it?
Just so you know, I was going just for what the complaint was with the doctor, but that doesn't mean I wasn't going to come back, or you might not come back with something totally separate that has nothing to do with the doctor.
No, yeah, I agree. I mean, the doctor in this point, I mean, I'm in agreements there that we're fine there. It's just some of the America's Best things, I think, maybe need to be looked at.
I'll offer a little bit more discussion also. I'm not sure I see this as Dr. Blom's a concern towards her and this complaint directed at her. I view this as a responsibility of the business also, because it's a separate entity, and although she works there, doesn't have the ability to discipline the staff or enforce how the staff handles some of these complaints. And so I don't think she deserves a letter of concern on her record with regard to this. And I do think it's appropriate to follow with the Dispensing Opticians Board. And I also think that the patient can make a complaint, a HIPAA complaint, and direct it towards the Office for Civil Rights. But I'm not sure that it's our board's place to issue a letter of concern to Dr. Blom. So that's my position, just for the rest of the board. Is there any further discussion?
Madam President, members of the board,
yeah.
If I may. So part of Dr. Fasagas's motion included the record keeping law, which would be R421305, specifically mm-hmm. letter F. And I'm hoping this might help you a little bit. I understand what you're saying about Dr. Blom being a contract doctor, but it does say, regardless of the form in which a licensee creates and maintains patient records, the licensee shall comply with all laws regarding security, confidentiality, maintenance, and release of the records. I think that speaks to the fact that regardless of whether you're a contract or a one day a week fill-in, you're all independent optometrists, and you're all responsible for your records. So, you know, I don't know if we want to get into the area. I mean, if we start having issues where the optical is maintaining the records of the doctor, you know, that's not something that we want to see happen. So if I misunderstood, I apologize, but I just wanted
I think you make, I think you make a good point, Margaret. Yeah.
That was my point.
I guess, I'm sorry. And then I'll just hand it over to you, Dr. Trisagas. I think the way I interpret that, and I agree, and I know what you're getting at, Margaret, it wasn't a violation on Dr. Blom's part. She didn't mishandle the record, and she didn't, she wasn't irresponsible with handling of the record. This complaint, in my opinion, is just a observation on the part of the patient that the optician had records on his desk that he left unattended, and that they didn't seem secure, and that they were up behind a reception desk. However, a lot of us have charts behind a reception desk, and there are people at the reception desk. That, so I guess I don't look at that so much as a concern. And then I also look at the optician who maybe left his desk, that we don't actually know what was in that record, if that was the patient record or if that was actually paperwork for dispensary. And so I'm just saying that to me, there's a bit of a lack of connection between Dr. Blom being responsible for that and what the patient has asserted. I'll hand it over to you, Dr. Chrysagas.
Okay, the whole point, obviously, they have no control over what happens in the optical or part of the whole operation. But as I understand it, the doctors are sole and separate from the optical in America's Best, and they have a contract to do the optometric part of it. And so they can, whether the front office staff is theirs or, because the techs are probably theirs, if there are any techs, and whether the front office staff is theirs or America's Best, I don't know. But all I'm saying is the doctors need to be aware that if it's the file shouldn't go anywhere. And it's not Dr. Blum's responsibility, but by being an employee there, something needs to be done. And it's probably the people that employ her that need to make a point with National Vision that they need their files protected, because they're the ones responsible for them. And it being a non-disciplinary action, that's why I brought it up. But I'm, as long as the files are protected, I'm all for whatever we decide to do.
Okay. Any further discussion? All right, so let's vote on the motion in front of us then. This is to issue a letter of concern regarding record keeping, for Dr. Blom. Dr. Hunter, how do you vote?
I vote aye.
He votes aye.
Okay. Dr. Chrysagas?
Aye.
Dr. Mastoris?
Aye.
Dr. Jones?
Aye.
and I vote nay. So it's a motion passes 4-1. All right. So moving on to agenda item D3, complaint number IR202110 regarding Dr. Mike Wu. I would ask Dr. Hunter to provide a summary, but I can't hear you all that well, Dr. Hunter, so I think I'm going to do it. Patient LH scheduled an appointment with Dr. Wu on December 4th and presented wearing a face shield. She reported the office had no signage of mandatory mask wear, which the office denies. At check-in and pre-testing, she was informed she'd have to remove her shield and wear a mask during the exam. During pre-testing, she was heard, she did remove her face shield and she did don a mask of her own, but she was heard by multiple staff members to use profanity regarding the use of the mask and made confrontational statements about the mask use. Patient LH felt strongly that she was being discriminated against and that Pima County Board of Supervisors had provisions for people who had a medical condition that could not wear a mask. In addition, the patient states that she wasn't offered a place to insert her contact lenses after she was asked to leave. She had to use the bathroom at Costco. The office provided multiple testimonials about the language used during the visit, and their assertion is that the patient left and then returned asking to insert her lenses. At the time, the pre-testing area was in use by another patient, and so she was provided a starter kit to use in the bathroom to reinsert her lenses. Is patient LH present on the phone?
Patient LH, are you present? Patient LH? No response, Madam President.
Okay. And Dr. Wu, is Dr. Wu present?
Dr. Wu, are you present telephonically? Dr. Wu? No response, Madam President.
Okay. So then, let's discuss this among the board members. Any comments?
Any comments, Dr. Hunter?
No.
No comments.
I have one. in reading the patient's letter, I was actually taken aback that they would do those things, but there's two sides to every story, sometimes three. And if the belligerence was anything like all the other letters said, my motion is going to be to dismiss this complaint based on lack of violation of the Optometric Practice Act.
Any other board discussion? Dr. Jones?
I agree. I mean, you know, it's a sensitive situation right now, but I agree with if somebody is being using that type of language, you can't, you know, have that in your office, and it can get out of hand pretty quickly. So I second that motion.
Was that a motion, Dr. Kasagas?
Oh.
Yeah, I said it was without saying it was a motion. I think that's what I did, yeah.
Gotcha. You always ask me. I'm just asking you.
No. It's legit. I think I just get ahead of myself.
Dr. Mestoris, any comments?
I believe I would have done the same thing that they did after reading everything. And so I agree with the motion.
So my comments about this are in line with everyone else's. I don't see discrimination here. And actually, it wasn't really a dispute about the mask. It was more about the patient's behavior after she donned the mask. And the business has a right if other patients or staff feel somewhat threatened, and the language that was purported to have been used does sound somewhat contentious to me. So I also think the business has a right here to ask her to leave. I would also support a motion to dismiss if anyone would like to make it.
I will make a formal motion. I make a motion to dismiss the case due to lack of violation of the Optometric Practice Act. I don't know the case number.
I'll second it.
Okay.
Okay. Any further discussion? All right, so we'll vote. Dr. Hunter, there's been a motion to dismiss. How do you vote?
I vote aye.
He votes aye.
Dr. Chrysagas?
Aye.
Dr. Mastoras?
Aye.
Dr. Jones?
Aye.
I also vote aye, so the motion passes 5-0. And we'll move on to agenda item D4, IR number 202111, Dr. Susan Reckel. Dr. Jones, would you like to provide a summary?
Sure, let me get to it. This is IR 202111 against Dr. Susan Reckel, patient AV. Basically, complaint concerns deceptive statements by office staff. And let me go here. Basically, what she's saying on December 4th, she received a text message saying that she could order more contact lenses. She tried to place the order, but was unable. So when she called in, they told her she had not been seen for 18 months, therefore the contact lens prescription was expired. And then she was accused of being a contact lens abuser. That upset her, and she had some examples of her family members that, you know, they wouldn't be accused of being an abuser. So she just felt that that was offensive, and she wanted them to be reprimanded for her unprofessional behavior. I will point out that the person that called her, allegedly called her an abuser, was a staff member and not Dr. Reckel. And that's it.
Okay, thank you. So is patient AV on the phone?
Yes,
I am.
All right. Yes, she is, Madam President.
Okay. So, patient AV, this is your opportunity to discuss your concerns regarding your complaint, if you'd like to take it.
Yeah, that was very well described. I just felt like for someone to say that to me, I looked at it as, what evidence do they have? What is in my chart? It just seemed to be a very unfounded comment, especially given COVID. I just felt like, what evidence do they have to speak to me that way? You know, one of the examples I gave was my veterinarian doesn't accuse me of not taking care of my dog because I get my heart guard from my father-in-law for our animals. And, you know, it was that scenario of being accused of that, being told that by an office person. It was abrasive. It was uncomfortable. It made me mad. It was hurtful. It was awkward, you know, and so I just linked it to what has Dr. Reckel put in my record over the years, because I've been going there since about 2005. For them to even, I mean, I don't know. I'm making an assumption here. I don't know if they even looked in my record, but to make that jump, I didn't even know what that even is. And when we looked it up, it was just, I guess it's someone that wears them longer than what they're supposed to be used for. And I'm just thinking, what evidence do you have to have someone say that to a longtime patient? So it bothered me enough that I wanted to write in and make a complaint, and hopefully this person won't have someone else be in this situation again.
Okay, thank you. Does that conclude your remarks?
Yes.
All right. And is Dr. Reckel present?
Dr. Reckel, are you present on the phone? Dr. Reckel? No response, Madam President.
Okay, thank you. So I'd like to open this up to the board for discussion. Dr. Hunter, any comments?
I do not have any.
No comments, Madam President.
Okay. Dr. Mastores, any comments?
Yes. We've run into this issue at our practice as well. Patients, you know, being concerned about coming into the office due to COVID and, you know, their contacts, they're needing to get contacts. And of course, we always want to see them and assess the health and the prescription. I do think that's very important. But we have found in our practice that we have to give people a little grace right now. And so at my practice, we have extended some prescriptions or offered the patient one box of contacts to get them through till they could be seen and, you know, providing them with, you know, all the safety precautions that we're taking in office. So I think that probably all of us have run into this problem through 2020 and 2021. And I know also that some doctors can shame patients for their contact lens habits. I don't do that. I don't like the way it feels to be shamed about anything, so I don't do it myself. But I do know doctors who do really drill that into patients, and I just don't do it myself. And I don't think that my patients are worse off for that. So I understand the concern that the patient has, and it's not nice to be called things that you aren't. And then I do understand that COVID has created a lot of these issues. Thank you.
Okay. Dr. Jones, any thoughts?
You know, I feel bad that, you know, she was, because yeah, COVID right now, it you know, you some especially right during that time, I think too, we were having like a big influx of cases. So I feel bad for the patient. I will say that sometimes we don't have control of what our staff says to patients. You know, and that's something that Dr. Reckel probably needs to sit down with her staff and discuss. How they talk to patients, and you know, that would be my advice, is to kind of sit down with her staff in her front desk, and give some pointers and stuff.
Dr. Chrysagas.
Well, you always know I have something to say, but I think I agree with everything that's been said, and I'm hoping that this was a, as Darcy mentioned, a communication error, an unfortunate use of the term abuser, and that hopefully what he was saying when he was asked why this couldn't, or she was asked, why this couldn't happen, was because of health reasons, this and the other, or to protect against abuse of contact lens wear, which is exactly that, where people overwear them. And hopefully he was just using it as an example, and saying that that's what we're trying to protect against. But either way, I mean, what is said is true, but it's unfortunate, I think, the way it was said. And with COVID and everything else, yeah, I mean, there are different ways you want to do things, but I just think it was an unfortunate miscommunication.
Okay. I'll offer some thoughts on this also. I think just for the patient's benefit, I think it was a very inarticulate way of saying anything, and almost shuts down conversation when you use words like abuser. So I would never want any of my staff to say that to a patient. I think the assumption was based on the, it had been 6 months since the expiration of the prescription. And so I think that's why the staff member jumped to that conclusion. But again, I don't know, at least speaking from my perspective, I don't know that there's any label in your chart. This was just an assumption based on the expiration date of your previous prescription. The question, I guess, before the board is, does the use of this, you know, name calling, I guess, for lack of a better option, does it justify a complaint against the doctor? And if so, what does that look like? Does anyone want to make a motion?
I'll make a motion. This is Darcy Jones. I make a motion to dismiss the complaint due to lack of violation of the Optometric Practice Act. I don't know if in the letter we can tell, just maybe say something to Dr. Reckel about recommending her having a staff education on patient communications. Otherwise.
Madam President, members of the board, Dr. Jones, you would actually do that through a letter of concern. So if you are thinking that you want to give a little bit of directive to Dr. Reckel, you could, you know, our unprofessional conduct law is vast. So you could issue, you know, a letter for the comments, the inappropriate comments made, and that it's the doctor's responsibility to train their staff, and she should do so. You're muted. We can't hear you.
I said, I don't know. Oh, I'm on mute.
I can hear you now.
No, you're not. Oh, now you're on mute.
I'm like, I'm confused. I don't know that I want to do that. I don't know. I mean, I just don't know how you can be responsible for everything that comes out of somebody's mouth. That's not yourself. I do think you can educate your staff, but I don't know if what you guys think about this, but I guess I would just say then to dismiss the complaint due to the lack of violation of Optometric Practice Act. Thoughts?
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Is there any other discussion? I'm not opposed to a letter of concern in this case, just to reflect that the doctor should have a conversation with her staff and how she interacts, he or she interacts with patients. It sounds like I'm alone in that. So let's proceed with a roll call vote. Oh, Dr. Krasakis, you're on.
Yeah, board. I said I started talking like Darcy without hitting my unmute button. But the my second was more to get to a discussion.
Okay.
You're not alone in your thoughts as far as that's concerned. Only because, again, a letter of concern to me, and even going back to the last one, is it's non-disciplinary, but it gets attention more so than just getting a letter saying it's been dismissed. If a doctor is truly interested in what went on, they would either watch the recording of this or look at the minutes of this. And I've always hoped that they would do that, because I've even mentioned a few times that as long as they're reading this or seeing this, at least they know what our discussion was. And I'm not sure that always happens if they get a letter saying it was dismissed. Where a letter of concern definitely shows that some thought was given to it, and that, again, it's non-disciplinary, but it is making a point that, you know, you need to look at this.
Any other discussion? So let's take a roll call vote on Dr. Jones's motion to dismiss the complaint. Dr. Hunter, how do you vote?
I vote aye.
He votes aye.
Okay, Dr. Krasakis, you were muted.
I'll figure this out about the time we're done. No.
Okay, Dr. Mastoras?
No.
Dr. Jones?
I vote aye.
I also vote no, so the motion fails 3-2. Do we want to entertain another motion or have any other discussion?
I can make a motion.
Yeah.
I'd like to make a motion that a letter of concern be sent to Dr. Reckel concerning, what was the word you used, Margaret?
Unprofessional conduct.
Yeah, well, it was a broad term you said. It's not unprofessional conduct as much as it is just staff communication, that some type of letter of concern be sent that we need to, train our staffs to communicate with patients. How would I put that into verbiage?
Madam President, members of the board, Dr. Chrysagas. I think your letter of concern would be for a possible, you know, inappropriate comments to the patient, regardless of whether it was from staff or the doctor. You just want to let the doctor know that they need to work on the way they speak to their patients, and that staff training would be in order, would be recommended or highly suggested.
I think that's a great motion, Margaret, and I you can put my name on it. Yeah.
Okay.
I'll second the motion. Any other discussion? All right, let's take a roll call vote. So Dr. Hunter, we have a motion to issue a letter of concern regarding staff training and professional communication between the staff and a patient. How do you vote?
I'll vote aye.
He votes aye.
Okay. Dr. Chrysagas?
Aye.
And Dr. Mastoras? Dr. Jones?
I would vote nay.
Okay. And I vote aye. So the motion passes, excuse me, in a 4-1 count. Okay. So.
Patient AV, this is Margaret Whalen. You'll get a copy of that letter of concern sent to you.
Thank you guys so much for considering this. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you. Let's move on to agenda item E, review, discussion, and possible action on pending endorsement applications. So Dr. Daniel Bazua is listed as an approved application. Is that correct, Margaret?
No, Madam Chair. I would actually like to remove this item from the agenda.
Okay.
I do not need the board's approval. The fingerprint results are coming back today.
Okay. All right, so we'll move on to agenda item F, review, discussion, and possible action on pending renewal application for Dr. Brent Hartzell. I believe Dr. Hartzell had a lawsuit filed against him and then later dropped. Is there any concern by the board of approving Dr. Hartzell's renewal application? Dr. Hunter, any concerns?
I have no concerns, no.
Okay. Dr. Mastoras?
No concerns.
Okay. Dr. Jones? I see you shaking your head.
Yeah, no, I mean, it doesn't really say what was for, but it was dismissed, so.
Okay. I think even dropped. I'm not sure it was really, yeah. And Dr. Chrysagas?
No, I have none.
Okay. I also have no concerns. Would anyone like to make a motion to accept Dr. Hartzell's application for renewal? Sure, I'll make a motion to accept Dr. Hartzell's application for renewal. Is there a second?
I'll second that, Dr. Hartzell.
Okay, thank you. Any further discussion? All right, so we'll vote. Dr. Hunter, we have a motion to accept Dr. Hartzell's application for renewal. How do you vote?
I vote aye.
Okay, and Dr. Chrysagas?
Aye.
Dr. Mastoras?
Aye.
Dr. Jones?
Aye.
I also vote aye, so the motion passes 5-0. Next, agenda item G. Executive Director approval of new license applications pursuant to ARS 32-3123. Doctors G1A through F were approved between February 5th and April 1st.
Yes.
Any discussion? Margaret, any comments?
No, thank you, Madam President. Excuse me.
Okay. Okay. So agenda item H, review and discussion of possible action on application for volunteer health services under ARS 32-3217, Dr. Gail Daniels. Is there any concerns about Dr. Daniels' applications for volunteer work in the state of Arizona?
I've never seen it. I'm sorry.
What is that organization? Sorry. What is that organization? The one that she wants to do that for. I mean, I think it's great and everything, but I was like, Arizona's Sunshine, but S-O-N, I mean, as far as who she's doing this with?
You know what, Dr. Krasakis, I didn't look it up. Let me just take a look real quick.
I mean, I was just wondering what they did and who they were.
I thought that was the same one that she's been doing. This is her third application, I believe, to volunteer here in Arizona, so.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it. I was just wondering who they are or what they do.
I think they're in the outer lying areas, but let me see.
Margaret, can you explain what this, I've never seen, I didn't know this existed. Could you explain what the volunteer application is?
Yes. So I want to say it's probably been almost 5 years ago. The governor had a law passed that would allow doctors to come in and volunteer for up to 14 days every 2 years without getting a state license in whatever profession they are. And the only requirement is that they still have to practice at their scope that's in their state. And there's just a separate little application, and the respective boards just need to approve the doctor's application. So it's staff's job to submit the application to the board, along with just kind of, we do like a little mini license verification, make sure there's no disciplinary action, because if they have disciplinary, they can't do it. I can send you, I can't remember the statute number off the top of my head, but I can send you the volunteer statute number so you can read it. It was just kind of a vehicle to get people to come to the outer lying areas. It's mostly where it has to be a nonprofit. They cannot use it to come out and do vacation fill-in work or anything like that. They have to be, excuse me, working for a nonprofit. That Arizona Sunshine, it looks like it's a ministry of some kind, Seventh-day Adventist ministry up in Prescott Valley. So they're most likely doing eye exams for the kids or something like that for the underserved areas.
I have a question. This is Darcy. Darcy Jones.
I can't hear you, Dr. Jones.
You have to have a...
There you go.
Yeah. Do you have to have a current license in a different state? She just puts 2021, but it doesn't really say when they expire, so I don't know. Is that mandatory to volunteer here that you have to have a...
You do have to have a license, yes.
Well, she just lists that it expires 2021, so I don't know, did it expire last month? She has like three different state licenses, so I just didn't know if she sent something else into you or not.
You know what, I'm not sure she did.
I just don't want to say, oh yes, let's pass her, and then she doesn't have a valid license and something come from that.
Because I believe her primary license is out of the state of Texas.
Madam President, members of the board, this is Mona Baskin. The statute that governs this is ARS 323217. And under that statute, under A1, it requires that the applicant holds an active and unrestricted license in a state territory of the United States, has never had a license revoked or suspended, and is not the subject of an unresolved complaint, and that they may apply for it every 2 years as prescribed by the board, that they are agreeing to render services, pardon me, I'm coughing, at a free clinic, and that they provide only care and services that the health professional is licensed or authorized to provide under their license.
What was her primary state? I can look up the license real quick. I'm sorry, I don't have her application in front of me.
It doesn't say, it just has three states listed, and it just says expiration 2021 on all three.
Oh, what are the states?
Idaho, Texas, and Montana.
Yeah, I think she's
she lives in
Texas,
Texas,
right?
Yeah. Okay. I don't know if we can make a motion that if she provides a
valid license that she can?
I have it right here. Her license is active through December 31st of this year. My apologies for not providing that sooner.
And since I'm still unmuted, I'll make a motion to accept this volunteer application for Dr. Gail Daniels.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? All right, so we have a motion to accept Dr. Daniels' application for volunteer work. Dr. Hunter, how do you vote?
Aye.
Okay. Dr. Chrysagas?
Aye.
Dr. Mestores?
Aye.
Dr. Jones?
Aye.
And I also vote aye. The motion passes 5-0. So item I, review discussion, possible actions on approval of testing centers for proctoring of jurisprudence exam pursuant to AAC R4-21-203C. We have five listed, is that correct, Margaret? I've got the right agenda.
Yes,
okay. Five listed testing centers. So NSU Florida, I Associates of New Mexico Vision Research Center, Arizona Optometric Association here in Phoenix, Oklahoma College of Optometry, and the University of Calgary External Exam Center in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Are there any concerns among the board members for any of these potential proctoring sites?
I have a question.
Okay.
Margaret, why would the Arizona Optometric Association need to be a proctor site when it's in the same city as the state board, other than maybe COVID, if you're not in the office? Is there any reason to do that?
Thank you, Dr. Chrysagas, for the question. It's actually about the proctor, since the state board is not proctoring it. That request was specifically to take the exam during the spring Congress in April, at the end of April. I wasn't planning on going down to proctor it, so I was actually asking Dr. Stacy Meyer if he would be so gracious as to proctor the exam, and he stated he would if the board approved it.
Okay, I have another question then. Mm-hmm. Having been to a number of ARBO meetings and looking at regulatory provisions that we do, do you see this as a possible conflict that the professional association is proctoring a regulatory board's exam? I mean, I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm just saying, do you see that as a potential conflict?
I'm actually uncomfortable with it. I don't like the AZOA having our exam. No disrespect to the AZOA, but it's always the state board versus the association kind of a thing. But that being said, it's just one person, and I do trust Dr. Meyer to not disseminate the exam or anything like that, but it's really up to the board. So that's my opinion on how I feel about it, but I also, I don't want to inconvenience the doctor, but he certainly could drive up to Phoenix and take the exam. Like, I would be willing to proctor it on a day that isn't the normal exam day. I'm not sure why he's not driving up to Phoenix or if he's not flying in here.
Yeah.
So those are.
And it has nothing. It has nothing to do with trusting Dr. Meyer either. It's more of the. I'll just say the transparency, especially this in these days of regulation and versus the profession. I just don't know if that's a good window or a good precedent to set. Just because we trust Dr. Meyer, we're going to let the AZOA proctor an exam for the board. I mean, again, I don't have a problem with it per se. I've just heard so much about regulation.
I agree, Dr. Chrysagas. Those are excellent comments.
Dr. Moffitt, members of the board, Dr. Chrysagas, this is Mona Baskin. I would like to read to the board what the statute states. It's AAC R421203. It is entitled Jurisprudence Examination. The jurisprudence exam may be taken in person at the Arizona State Board of Optometry offices through the National Board of Examiners in Optometry or at a proctored testing center approved by the board. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, we know that, Mona.
that you being, I'm not gonna say anything about farm, but do you think that there's a conflict here? Because if you don't, I don't have a problem with it. I just don't want, who's the guy we always listen to at Arbo, Margaret?
Dale Atkinson.
That's him. I don't want him coming down. I don't want to be one of his slides at the next Arbo show. talking about something that shouldn't have been done as far as a regulatory board goes.
Well, I would point the board to the language, and it specifically says at a proctored testing center approved by the board. So I think the operative language is at a proctored testing center. And whether or not the Arizona Optometric Association's meeting fits that definition, and if you want further discussion, we could always go into executive session. Thank you.
So I'll comment. I think this is a good concern to have, and in my opinion, probably better to err on the side of caution. And just for my own testing, I flew in from the state of Hawaii to Phoenix to come take the exam. So there is some assumed inconvenience on the part of the doctor when he sits for his law exam. So I don't mind telling him, no, he can't take it at the AZOA meeting with Dr. Meyer.
Perfect.
Any other comments?
So what would we do? Would I make a motion to approve items 1, 2, 4, and 5? As testing centers?
Yes, you could do that, and then you could make a second motion to deny or not accept item number 3.
Wouldn't just die for lack of a motion?
No,
no. I'll make a motion that we accept items 1, 2, H1, 2, 4, and 5 as testing centers for the Arizona jurisprudence exam.
I'll second that. This is Darcy Jones. I'll second that.
Any further discussion?
I'd just like to ask, like, are these the only 4? Or are there other places? Like, I wasn't aware other than here.
Tons.
Oh, okay. But they're testing.
I didn't know I was on. I took my mic off for the vote. I didn't realize that.
So it's like colleges of optometry, testing centers. Are there any other, like, random ones that are out there?
Dr. Mastoris, the board has been approving them as they are requested. So lots of local libraries where people live have either adult testing centers or proctoring centers or some kind of education centers for adults. And so we've been approving those as well. It's just kind of wherever, kind of like Ms. Baskin said, is a kind of a safe testing center, you know, where it's not kind of what the AZOA would be. And this has nothing to do with the AZOA, but this is a spring Congress. This is a meeting. This is, you know, are they going to be testing in someone's room? Are they going to be testing in the cafeteria or in one of the restaurants? Like, I mean, you know, it's not like kind of a
controlled,
maybe the bar.
Controlled is the way.
Yeah.
Controlled testing center.
Okay.
Or formal testing center, I should say. Does that clarify?
Is there any further discussion? Any further discussion? So we have a motion to accept, and I have my agenda. This is agenda item I. Am I off?
Oh, no.
I.
Okay? I've got the old one here. You're right.
All right. Okay. So, well, I was wrong before, Dr. Kasaga, so now I'm on alert. So item I, number 1, number 2, number 4, and number 5. To accept them as testing centers for proctoring of a jurisprudence exam. Dr. Hunter, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dr. Kasagas?
Aye.
Dr. Mastoris?
Aye.
Dr. Jones?
Aye.
And I also vote aye, so the motion passes 5-0, which leaves us with agenda item I, number 3. Would anyone like to make a motion with regard to the Arizona Optometric Association proctor, Dr. Stacy Meyer? I'll make a motion
that we do not accept the Arizona Optometric Association, Proctor Stacy Meyer, Dr. Stacy Meyer, to proctor the jurisprudence exam. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay. Any further discussion? Okay. Dr. Hunter, we have a motion to deny the Arizona Optometric Association and Proctor Dr. Stacy Meyer as a official testing center for jurisprudence or for proctoring the jurisprudence exam. How do you vote?
I'll vote aye.
He votes aye.
Dr. Chrysagas?
Aye.
Dr. Mastores?
Aye.
Dr. Jones?
Aye.
I also vote aye. So the motion passes 5-0. Agenda item J, Executive Director's Report. Margaret, you're up.
Thank you, Madam President, members of the board. Starting out, excuse me, with our budget. As of February 28th, 2021, our beginning cash balance is $449,237, with an ending cash balance of $442,763. 66.67% of the fiscal year has elapsed, with the board's spending at 51.76. The reason there is such a difference, normally, you know, I do underspend if possible. There's a few outstanding big bills, such as our Central Services Bureau, which is our accounting, our sales force, and then there also was, excuse me, some vacancy savings. So when Ms. Hollins left in December, the employee-related expenses that go along with her in that position, including her salary, of course, is a savings that doesn't get paid any further. I wanted to apprise the board of some accounting issues that we're having. It's not just our board, it's affecting the 53 agencies that are serviced by the Central Services Bureau. There was a change in personnel actually about a year, maybe 15 months ago. The manager left, excuse me, and a new manager was hired. They hired a bunch of new staff. There has been 100% turnover in the staff, but not the new manager. And the new manager is not as willing to work with the state agencies as the previous manager, so there's been a little bit of push-pull between the two parties. And